Let's move to the last item for this morning, and Christoph Janowitz from Penn State University and Todd Paley from Orbis Technologies are going to do a presentation and a demo.
So first of all, thank you very much for inviting me here. And so my talk will also be about interoperability, same as the others that we heard before, but I thought that let's start with the first step, namely how do we handle heterogeneity and how we make sure that we don't lose the heterogeneity. And I think we have seen slides like that 1,000 times, and you all know what's on the slides. The reason why I'm showing, again, the slide saying that geographic information is composed out of a spatial, a temporal, and a semantic component is because this already took us like years to explain that to the semantic web community. But the point here, so the more difficult point is that now that they realize what's going on here, we and also them still keep thinking of, okay, we understand this one, so let's understand this one in an isolated way. But the whole point why I'm showing this is that I think that there's no way to understand what's going on here, that is to create an ontology about the attributive aspect without understanding and incorporating this aspect. So I think they cannot be isolated as represented down here. And I have selected a real-world case study, and I hope you like it, to explain why ontology plays a role here, or in more detail, why ontology cannot play a role in doing that. And I hope you recognize what this is over here. Any ideas? It's a pothole, okay? And maybe it's just a crack. Who knows, okay? But I would say that size matters, okay? So you say it's a pothole. For me, it's maybe rather a crack because it's not doing any harm to a car, for instance, right? So size matters in this definition. But also location matters, okay? So if this is like on the moon, and there are many of them there, who cares, right? If this is in the middle of the street, then you need to fix it, okay? So we have already started to say that we cannot talk about potholes just by their size and stuff like that, but we essentially need to tell you where they are as part of the ontological definition. Okay, and now what you can see here is like, I don't know where this picture was taken, but looks like a national park or forest, and you see a parking space over here, and you see this big, big, big pothole, and what is surprising is that they have not put, like, just a tape around that, but like a wooden frame, so this is going to stay for quite a while, right? So there are reasons. Money could be a reason. The location of the pothole could be a reason. But it all contributes to making sure that this is not of danger, and this has also effect on what you perceive as a pothole. And finally, unfortunately, many other things also play a role, like social structure. Again, I'm not the guy who took the picture, so I should not judge whether this is like not the best area. But let's assume it's not the best neighborhood, okay? And what you can see here, I assume that this is from a construction site. And it's also, it has been there for quite a while, and people seem not very happy with it, okay? So this all influences the way how we think about what a pothole is and what makes a crack a pothole, okay? And now let's dive into ontologies of potholes. And these are all real examples, even if they sound very funny, okay? So what you can see here is that in certain parts of the UK, and they have a lot of pothole definitions, a pothole is a crack which has a depth of at least 30 millimeters, okay? In other places in the UK, a pothole is a crack with a width of a dinner plate and the depth of a golf ball, okay? The same is true for yet another place, but the dinner plate is smaller and it's a fist. And in Coventry, a pothole can be reported to the government if it's a pound coin and a 1p coin side by side, okay? And the important point here is that these communities have not come up with the different definitions just for the fun of it, okay? So people don't conceptualize geographic space in different ways because they like to, but because they have good reasons to do so. And one reason in this case is that due to a severe winter last year, There are millions of new potholes, and by state law, the local communities are responsible for keeping the road maintained, and therefore they have to fix the potholes, which is, of course, expensive. And if you would map that, it would turn out that places which allow for, let's say, the big potholes are also the better running, for instance, out of money in terms of local government. Okay? And what you can see here with the sweaters is that the winter plays a role here in constructing the need for changing the ontologies. Okay? So that's the temporal component. The aspect of the local government, the spatial component, plays a role. And it's also important that this is because they are responsible for their, whatever is in their administrative boundaries, right? Again, a spatial component. And finally, a thematic component, namely the issue of road maintenance. Okay? And now let's see why we can, in ontologies, only restrict the interpretation in a way we did here. But we cannot fix them, as this would be intended if we would create like an owl ontology of things out here. Okay, so let's revise and keep these definitions in mind. So this is a slide taken from Guarino's famous paper about ontology, and what you can see on the slide is that while we have concepts in our minds, we use certain languages and ontological commitments, that is, things that we believe are true in the world, to come up with the definition of an intended model as a subset of the infinite set of possible models that can be formed, for instance, with natural language. And ontologies are only an approximation of this intended model, which is hidden somewhere in our heads. Okay, I promised you to show some of the consequences, and here we go. Welcome to the wonderful world of potholes, okay? So this is, and that's a picture taken from an earthquake, after an earthquake. According to our definition, this is still a pothole. I would say that if you would ask people what this is, most of them would say it's not a pothole, or they would be very surprised if they look for potholes in streets to know where to drive, and they would find information about that. But you can still say, maybe we can refine the definition. We can maybe say, okay, we are all humans. We can all think. We can exclude that cases, okay? But keep in mind that the semantic web is essentially about reasoning. So machines will draw certain conclusions based on the ontologies that we give them. And one example of such a conclusion that you can arrive at using reasoner is this wonderful sentence. Constructing bridges is also constructing potholes. And according to our ontologies and simple reasoning, this is true. Okay, so you can only restrict interpretation, and if you're not careful, then you cannot restrict them in a way that things that don't make sense in the domain will still be true in the ontology. That's, of course, not new, right? But the important point that I'm trying to make here is that we shouldn't spend too much time on trying to fix meaning, but to restrict meaning and still to acknowledge the local or community-dependent character of meaning. Namely, that people come up with different conceptualizations of geographic space, not by chance, but reasons. And this is from case studies that we did together with students in Europe, and the story is exactly that. So if you have definitions of rivers, and now we are again talking about space, in North Europe, like in Germany, they may be very different from definitions of rivers in the South. So in the South, a river is a river even if there's no water for like 5 years. And the same is true for cultural aspects, right? So that's the cultural point here. If you're living in a country that is, most of the parts are below sea level, then estuaries have a very different meaning than when they are like sightseeing spots in other places. And the same is here for true for temporal patterns without going into further detail. And now if you think about linked data, which is like the biggest hype on the semantic web since 2 years, then what is happening on the linked data web, and before I go into details here, I really love linked data. I'm just bringing this up to make sure we know how to put the pieces together and what are the kinds of things that are or may turn out to be difficult. And I like this spaghetti throwing against wall example because that's exactly what's going on here. So if you look at linked data, then this has a wonderful idea of making information reusable, exchangeable, by just providing raw pieces of data and linking them together. But if you think back to the slides before, to understand what makes a pothole, or forest and rivers, then you need the context, right? And the context to find a document where is given by the document. If you open a Wikipedia page and it has a description about, let's say, the term time, right, then you can immediately figure out whether time is used in like a modern physics version because the Wikipedia article is about modern physics, or whether it's just used like to describe a soccer match, for instance, right? Once you isolated this information and just raw chunks of information, simply river, time, soccer, whatever, then it's hard to make sure that they still have the meaning that they were intended to have during the document, right? So there's one article about modern physics which explains time in Wikipedia, but the term time in Wikipedia is used millions of times in a very, very different sense, namely in a naive physical sense, okay? So there's a certain cost at making data accessible on the linked data web, and this is by removing the context, and we hope that we can get the context back using ontologies. But unfortunately, what we do so far is using OSNS and equivalent classes. Both are great constructs, and Todd will give a demo about what you can do with them, but we need to make sure that we don't say, oh, you know, this linked data source, for instance, from Amit's group, has a conceptualization of they're doing like weather, so let's say a blizzard. And there's also the Wikipedia article stored in Wikipedia about blizzards. Great, let's use equivalent class to link them. Okay? There's a high chance that this is going to produce, yeah, in many cases, even wrong results. And the situation is even more difficult with all the same. I'm not going into detail, but we can give you many nice examples. Therefore, what we are trying to do, or what we hope would be the agenda, would be to start at the ontologies and the heterogeneity, and then let the reasoner do the interoperability part. This may sound very familiar, but let me give you like a brief intro into how it differs from what you maybe saw in previous work and also in the talk today. So the vision of the Web 3.0 here is biased. It's like my vision, and it's different from the one Ami just presented, so please don't get confused. What we believe, or what we hope for, is that same as the Web 2.0, the idea of people contributing content, we hope that Web 3.0 will be about people contributing conceptualizations, okay? So that people will become active knowledge engineers. And we want to make sure that communities, and we said that people have different conceptualizations of geographic space in these communities for good reasons. We want to assist communities like you guys, for instance, and also assist the end users in being active knowledge engineers. Freebase is doing that, for instance, at least to a certain degree. And for this reason, we stopped thinking about this top-level, top-down ontologies for geographic space, because all examples that we saw over the last years, and unfortunately also all the examples that we have created over the last years, turned out to run into exactly this kind of pothole problems, okay? If you try to keep it top down, you will not only exclude local definitions, but you will have to have such a broad definition that a lot of things will go in there that you don't want to have in there. And keep in mind, reasoning will lead then to possibly wrong answers. What we would like to do is we would focus on the idea of ontology design patterns. Small tokens that can be used by communities and users to create ontologies on their own. So a guideline and tokens to create ontologies, and I will show you one token in a minute. And the second notion that we came up with, so this idea of ontology design patterns is of course not from us, but from Alvin Ben-Gemi. So the second idea that we came up with was semantic signatures. And here the idea was that we want to create the primitives used in the ontology, not also top, but bottom up, used from real data, from real communities, which have their own sense of local definition, namely from OpenStreetMap, Foursquare, and another Web2.0 social web startup called Wurl. And then, if we have the small local ontologies, we want to be able to combine them and relate them, and this is work that we have just presented at GS Science this year, not only as done so far in the semantic web, and especially in Guha's famous work from the 90s for OpenSite, in microtheories structured using inheritance, that is taxonomies, but we want to use, and think back to this definition of geographic space at the beginning, we don't want to separate them, but we want to structure local ontologies, also called contexts for good reasons, right? We want to structure them using temporal and spatial relations, not only the concepts, but also the local ontology. So we can say, this is the South European local ontology, which therefore is part of the bigger European local ontology, and this will have consequences for the reasons. And finally, the interoperability part between this local ontology is then realized by services such as Similarity, so this is what we are working on since several years, and we have demos and servers out there, but also other services like reasoning on default, stereotypes, and reasoning with inconsistencies, because this is the case when you put these micro theories together, and we hope to start a collaboration pretty soon with Pascal Hitzler, also from Wright State, famous Amit, who is famous for doing exactly that kind of research. And as I promised before, here's one of these ontology design patterns, a more complicated one, but I've chosen this one because we had heard other things about sensors from Luis and Amit, and this is from the same group, namely our W3C incubator group on the semantic sensor web. And our task here was to create a core pattern for the sensor ontology, but the idea was that this pattern can also be reused in many other contexts. And we also aligned it to the Deutsche upper ontology. And without going into much detail here, the main idea is it gives you a very, very small amount of classes, so if you take away the Deutsche classes, you just end up with like 4 or 5 relations between them and a description and a guideline how to use them that you can then use for many other ontologies that you want to create. And one example how to use it is the popular example again. So maybe you have recognized that all these portable definitions had like a common ground. Namely, they all were about depressions in the ground, right? Not bumps, not hills, that are in a supporting surface, right? They are not in water. We don't talk about like depressions in water as potholes. That impact the movement, but not the movement of cats, but of vessels, some sort of vessels by car along a certain path, right? And if you know a bit more about the history of geospatial semantics, then here comes a lot of good news. This is the observation part, so an observable depression, you can measure it, right? So you can use statistical methods and devices to come up with what a depression is, and you can use exactly this design pattern to do that, but supporting surface is an image schema, which is a famous approach from psychology, often used in geospatial semantics work. So this can end up, the idea of a surface, right, that we can, that offers support and that we can walk on. This will end up maybe as one of these additional design patterns. Vessel brings in the idea of affordances, also an idea that has been very influential in the past and hopefully also in the future, namely that definitions can only be defined with respect to a certain agent. So it's not a pothole for an animal, but it is a pothole, for instance, for a vessel. So the agent plays a role, this is the notion of affordances, can also be used to create these kind of patterns. And then we have yet another image schemata, namely the idea of such a path. And we also came up, without going into details, with a framework of how to create meaningful URIs, taking into account semantic heterogeneity and still arriving at some meaningful URI for all the linked data that we are going to create using this method. The next step are semantic signatures. We had many names for them before. We start with semantic footprints because we were inspired by gazetteers, then use semantic fingerprints, and finally we now arrive at the name and semantic signatures because we like the analogy to remote sensing and spectral signatures. So where is the ontology? If you are a remote sensing guy, like Ola is, do you need to answer the question, what exactly makes a field of crop a field of crop? No. Luckily, these guys simply observe the reflection values, and a field of crop is just what gives you this observation, right? So a certain pattern in, or what creates the spectral pattern in the reflection values of remote sensing devices. Of course, that's not the whole story, but that's part of the story. And you can distinguish certain land use types, for instance, based on this spectral signature, and if you cannot do it, like in this case, just looking at the visible band, you can do it by looking, for instance, at the infrared or thermal band. And the same way we think that we want to use numerical models, like models that we can use to understand we have a hill in our data set, or when there is a depression, like we use for potholes, and then come up with such signatures, unique signatures about the semantics, and then use them to re-apply pattern if you want to see more of the technical stuff. This will go to be implemented as semantic web rule language built in, so there's like no magic hidden behind that. So let's look how things can look like with real examples. This would be like a part of the semantic signature. Again, it's composed of many parts. It's what Christoph Milligan calls, who created this figure, a concept variogram based on Ola's work on semantic variograms. And what you can see here is real OpenStreetMap data from Münster and one in Germany. And I've just taken the public telephone boxes in red over here and there. And schools, I think we also had the schools example in one of the previous talks. And what you, for instance, can see here is that telephone boxes are not similar to other features in these. They seem to be quite unique in nature. They are not semantically similar to many other things, like pubs and nightclubs would be similar. I think these are, for instance, cafes and pubs or something like that over here. And what you can also see is that they are, like, uniformly distributed in space. So Tobler's first law would not apply here, for instance. The opposite is the case, for instance, for the school. And we have a rough first idea why it turns out that schools clump together, and that brings us back, if we have time at the end, why definitions, even such obvious ones, what makes a school, really depends on where they are defined. So we found out that in New York City, for instance, people take single buildings, even each building of university, as one school. In State College, they use just one big bounding box for the university, and schools are really component of many buildings and really only include schools and not a university building, for instance. Okay? So you need to have local semantic signatures for cities or urban area versus rural areas and stuff like that. And based on the signatures, you can then automatically create your ontology. Yet another visualization of what I just said, namely that, let's start this time with the schools. Okay, we see the same schools are more clustered together for some reason, and we just discussed this reason, and you see the more you go into blue, the more dissimilar the bordering things are. And what you can see here, this is the case of the public phone office. They are like, their distribution is like more uniform in space. So just to give you a rough impression of the terms in ontology, namely that you can derive terms like uniform or clump to characterize geographic feature types in your ontology and still keep the local signatures. So clump or uniform, saying that telephone stations can be described as uniformly distributed features, may still differ from place to place. And you can do the same with the temporal component. So for instance, steakhouses are evening locations, and this is now based on rural and Foursquare data, and museums are more like afternoon locations, and colleges, and compare that to the beer tag that was assigned by people, are like weekday and beer locations, whatever this is, are tag from real users, seem to be like more weekend locations. This is only part of the story, but together, each of these components will form a unique semantic signature that we then can use for reasoning and to create the ontology. And now we are very close to the end of the talk, so let's dive into the second part, namely structuring local ontologies. And if you think here, for instance, about cities or actors or places, then we said that the definitions are local, they depend on context. In this case, for instance, they depend on spatial location. So the theory for Europe includes the theory for South Europe, but South Europe may still be very different in nature. The same is true for temporal relations between them. In ancient knowledge, you want to allow in your ontology that people have two places of birth, right, because that's what you have in your data sources, but in like a modern area ontology, you don't want to allow that anymore. And using this very kind of structuring, we could, for instance, show that the definition of the INSPIRE, which is the European initiative to come up with a combined and unique data scheme, or maybe even ontology for the European Union, defines water courses as flowing water bodies, and we could demonstrate that using examples like rivers in Spain, rivers in Germany, and stuff like that, that this definition is too strict and will exclude definitions or force people to adopt views on the world that they may not share. And instead of that, we demonstrate using computational models, like in this case, these common human similarity reasoning combined, that based on this local definition and setting some sort of meta rules about the micro theories, we can automatically compute like a compromise, in this case the least common subsumer. So we don't want to create the European definition top down, but we want to take all the local definitions and automatically arrive at the right, whatever this is, European river definition. And we were able to demonstrate that this works quite good. However, and here you see an example, so the INSPIRE river definition would include the German river, but exclude the Spanish river in contrast to our solution. So why this demonstration worked well so far using similarity and least common subsumer reasoning, it turns out that if you would do that for all countries in Europe, you will have the problem that you will remove nearly all relevant features. There will always be something on what that guys don't agree, okay? So for more realistic or more complex scenarios, we need things like default. 90% of the countries agreed that there is flowing water. So even if Spain doesn't agree, we can still use the flowing water, but using stereotypes and reasoning with inconsistencies, we can still exchange data that is achieved semantic interoperability. And finally, just showing that we have done demos based on exactly that and implementation, especially also on similarity reasoning within such ontologies, for information retrieval, also decision support system, and especially also in supporting people creating such local ontologies, and people can use our similarity server, for instance, to understand whether they agree with an ontology on the web. So you can download an ontology, load it into our tool, and see whether the conceptualization make their match your needs. And I'm not going into any detail here because we have just 1 minute left, but because we have this wonderful OGC presentation today, I just wanted to announce that we have implemented a first release of what we call the Web Reasoning Service, which is able to combine OGC web services with semantic web services by transparently encapsulating semantic web services as OGC service. So the Web Reasoning Service is, in fact, a semantic web reasoner like Palette, but it's hidden, it's encapsulated inside of the Web Processing Service, and therefore for regular SDI users, it looks like the OGC web. And I leave the conclusions up to you. Thank you very much.